Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show, so stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.
Hello, friends, and welcome to The Point, the home services podcast that focuses on marketing and operational solutions to help you get better. Because if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. Now, let's cut through the bullshit and get to the point.
What is up, To The Point listeners? I'm your host, Chris Yano, and I have my co-host, Mr. Tall Paul. What's up, brother?
Hey, how's it going? Hey, real quick, Chris, I can tell just out of the gate, you're like, you're next level today. You're feeling it. You've had a little bit of coffee. You're well rested. What are we in for?
Dude, you already know. Four cups in, I'm a two cup kind of guy. It was just, I was feeling it today. Kind of like, you know, you're feeling it when you put on that ugly ass plaid shirt.
This one is a flannel. This isn't just a plaid. Last week was a plaid. This is actually my second favorite shirt.
You know, if you just unbutton one more of those, you might be able to, there you go. Now he's looking fresh to death.
No collar, no dollar.
Well, listen, let's get after it because I have a feeling that we're not going to stay within our normal parameters on this particular episode because I want to introduce my guest. And this is another reason we're going to derail is because I've listened to, never met our guest until today, face to face, but know of him, know of the things that he's accomplished along the way. And there's so much knowledge in here and so many tactical takeaways that our listeners are going to take from it. So I want to introduce our guest, Mr. Josh Kelly. Josh, what's up, my man?
What up, man?
Coming in here, looking all fresh. I mean, looking like $1 million, already dropping bombs in the pre-episode banter we had. I mean, I have a feeling this is going to be one for the books. So I'm super stoked. Kyle, who produces our podcast. Kyle, are you pumped for today? He's pumped for today. Okay, so I want to get after it. What I want to do is this particular podcast episode is, are you the tooth fairy of the trades? So let me tell you how I came up with this. I have four kids, like I was talking about ahead of time. I have three girls, one boy. My son loses his tooth, and he's 8. So hopefully there's no kids listening to this. I doubt there would ever be, but... Tooth fairy clearly is not real.
What? Like,
I know. I mean, it's sorry, buddy. No more money under the pillow for you. If you're losing teeth, hey, something else is off.
I mean, I do MMA. I do jiu-jitsu. You never know.
That makes sense. Put that tooth in the bag. See what happens. So my son loses the tooth. And, of course, like I'm looking to see if I have cash on me. And like kids are getting way more money these days because I carry like a, I have like a 20 that I keep on reserve or 10 or something. I'm like, damn it. It was like a, wasn't a more.
Never fail.
But I give him a tooth. So I'm driving in the next morning. I'm trying to think of some really good topics, you know, down the line. And I'm thinking, man, I can't wait till the tooth fairy, you know, like as much as I love, I've got four kids, you know, I've got a long time to go. My youngest is 5. Is I can't wait till I don't have to keep coming up and getting up in the middle of the night, you know, and putting cash underneath the pillow for the tooth. So it made me think like, man, how can I figure out like tooth fairy's fake and he's getting money and the tooth fairy's fake. This could be a podcast because we talk about you can't fake it till you make it. It's not a long-term strategy. If you try to be the tooth fairy of the trades and you go out there and you put out something that you're not, you try to be someone you're not. Yes, you can get money in the short term because you can sell them and you can make shit up and you can pretend like you know what you're doing. But in the long run, those kids are going to get older and they're going to find out that you're fake and that you made that up and there ain't going to be no more money come in. And you can treat business the same way. You can't fake it till you make it as a long-term strategy. It just doesn't work. Is that fair, Josh?
No, that's totally fair. I mean, I've seen it. You've seen it. It's not good, man.
No, you can't fake it till you make it. You're going to get called out. And when you do, I don't know how it's really difficult to rebound from that. So I thought this would be a good one to talk about how to grow and scale your service company, both profitably and professionally, because you have excelled at this, which is why you're here. But that's where the Are You the Tooth Fairy of the Trades episode had come from, is faking it till you making it. Faking it till you make it is not a good strategy, and why you shouldn't do it, because you and I have both, all of us, have both come across guys that are doing exactly that. And it's gonna fail. So if you would, go ahead and let our listeners know kind of your background, your history. I always like to know how people got in the trades. So if let's go ahead and let's start there.
Yeah, and definitely I did never. Wow. That's getting ugly.
That's at that Ohio.
Yeah.
Cincinnati, Ohio.
Oh my God, he knows my background.
OH.
IO.
IO.
No, I never faked it because we were just trying to make money and try to figure it out. We never expected or wanted to be as big as we are. We love it now. But you know, that's the key to it. Right. So it's
a little company by the name of
Parker and Sons
based out of Phoenix.
Yeah. It's a local home service company, one city, one location, not that big a deal. We have about 7% market share, which is about 120 million in home service, residential only, no commercial, no new construction. It's my family's business. We grew our business from about 6.5 million to, this or last year we did 120 million. We're going to do hopefully 140, 150
this year.
That's
awesome, man.
In about 15 years. So from 6.5 to 120 in 15 years. A lot of luck, a lot of hard work, a lot of systems, a lot of ideas, a lot of stealing. You know, the same as everybody else.
Steve Jobs, baby.
Oh.
Steal those ideas and make them better. And make them your own.
You don't even have to make them better. You just got to put a twist on them. You know what I mean? As weird as it sounds, it's always best to be the best person in the room. Sometimes it's also okay just to be a different person in the room doing just as good. I know that's weird. But yeah, that's kind of my background. We do, HVAC, plumbing, electrical. I also have a marketing business. I also have a software business. I have a real estate business. You know, it's gotten out of hand real quick here.
Sounds like you might be an entrepreneur.
I don't know. Maybe an entrepreneur. I don't know how good of a one, but you know, keep driving every single day.
And, well, you were a part of this thing though. So when you and your dad got into this, it was, you guys were at 6.5 million.
Yeah.
And then, but you were in it from the beginning.
Yeah. I ran all the marketing and eventually some of the operations and pushed through. Paul, my father, is like, if you ever meet my father, he's one of the best people we ever met in your entire life. And that's not
just a
like,
good dude.
Oh, he's an amazing person. Someone not just you want to follow. Not a Melvin.
I can verify.
Yeah. Amazing person. True. And, I mean, he's the driving force to this, but I mean, you don't have one person being really effective when you grow 120 million. You have to grow, you have to have not just two, not just three, you have to have 20, you have to have 30, you have to have 50. I mean, this is a real comment and this is 100% real. We have people who answer the phones for Parker and Sons that care way more about Parker and Sons than Paul or I do. Like, we have such an amazing, solid team. And that's the reason we're successful above all else.
Like, so you have great, great culture, sounds like.
We have an amazing culture. We have great systems. It's the people that really make the difference, though. Like, you know, when we first started, we didn't have systems. We didn't have money. We didn't have marketing. We barely made payroll. We bought, you know, during the off season, which makes it really difficult to make money, right? But, you know, you fast forward, we went from 6.5 and tried to get to 7. Then we tried to get to 9. Then we tried to get to 12. Next thing you know, 120.
Yeah. Next thing you know.
Hopefully 140. We've been growing about 20 million a clip the last few years. I'd be okay with 140. 150 would be even better.
So having people has allowed you, and people and systems has allowed you to be able to go and try and do some other things.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah. Because
you can't do it just even with just you. Like,
oh, no, for sure. I mean, and I'm stretched thin, to be absolutely honest, like right now. Like, I'm not really involved in Parker and Sons day to day. I'm not really involved in Review Kangaroo, the software day to day. I'm not really involved in the real estate business. My wife runs that, right? I'm really just involved in my marketing business right now, but the goal would be to blow it up and take a few clients, make a really amazing mastermind where I change their businesses. Now, I have a few that I grew from like 4 million to what they did 12 million last year. And that's in like three years. Yeah, 3 years. I got to do the math on that.
Organic?
Organic marketing, helping improve their operations, consulting, marketing, all that fun stuff, right?
Okay.
Like, that's what I'm doing right now. But the goal would be, like, hey, make this scalable, make a system out of it. I'm writing like kind of, I wouldn't call a book because I'm not an author and I don't want to write a book, but you know, like building a solid system where it's repeatable. And obviously everything's different with every company and you have to tweak, but you know, take myself out of that business eventually too, where, you know, I get to think large scale and do cool things and grow businesses, which is what I love doing.
Yeah. So, and clearly good at it.
So far so good.
So let's just touch on this real quick. Cause you and I are talking about this at a time. And you focusing a lot on Clover marketing.
Yeah.
And we talked about you doing jam sessions. Now we have a mutual customer that we work with and Rusty over at WeCare in Southern California.
Right.
So maybe explain just to the listeners on what a jam session is to you, like how you're coming alongside and helping in those situations.
Yeah. So you're a marketing guy. So I built a funnel. What are the odds of that? Right. You know, I do speaking events, I do online advertising, and that goes into, you know, we give away what we call $100 million playbook, which is really cool stuff. And then it goes into jam sessions. Jam sessions is my big scalable idea. So one of the reasons I was so successful, Paul was so successful, the whole entire Parker & Sons team and eventually Review Kangaroo and Clover, is purely because I was willing to learn and do things that other people weren't willing to do, period. One of the things I was willing to do is I spent a lot of time, money, effort, stealing and borrowing ideas from other people. So I traveled. Paul's been to hundreds of businesses across the United States. I've worked with, I don't even know, like maybe thousands across the United States. And I visit their shops, learn about them, learn what they're doing well and what they're having trouble with. And I would share ideas. It's a mutual beneficial thing. There's no business in the United States that I could walk into that's not similar. So it's a home service that I can't learn something from. Sometimes it's what not to do, but yep. You know, I can always learn something from it. I can always give some value, right? So I spent a lot of effort on that. And at one point we got to a size where like we kind of came to the understanding that, you know, I don't have to fly to someone. I could kind of force them to come to me. And we started doing these meetings where we'd have people in and we'd do a round table and we'd pick a topic and we'd all talk about, you know, for example, one of the biggest problems in our industry, recruiting, right?
Yeah, right.
Like everybody's got problems with recruiting. Everybody's got different solutions. Everybody's trying different things. Instead of me trying to figure out everything, we had everybody come into Parkinson's. We sat around a round table and we tackled like recruiting. What are you doing?
What are you doing?
What's working? What are you doing? What are you doing? What are the results? How's it going? Right?
Right.
And we started doing this and it was really, that's when our growth really started like compounding and blowing up. And I thought about this for a long time. I said, this is a huge advantage, and I love having a huge advantage, but I'm not the type of person that believes there's not enough business for everyone. I think, you know, rising tide lifts all boats, and yep. I'm not trying to crush the solid company that stands behind the work. I'm trying to crush the Chuck in the truck. Chuck in the truck. There we go. Chuck in the truck. That doesn't stand, that closes out here in Phoenix. Like, this is one of the most competitive markets in the United States.
Absolutely.
They estimate, you know, on this time of year, right? End of March, middle of March, there's about 400 AC companies. In the summertime, the estimate goes up to about 1,200. And they shut down after summer, right? And that's not right. It gives everyone a bad look, right?
Companies.
Yeah, companies. Like, yeah, exactly.
Companies.
It gives everybody a bad look. Those are the people I'm trying to get rid of. So what I did is I took that idea, that concept, that learning from other people, and I systematized it. I found somebody who's really amazing at recruiting that's blowing everybody up, that's doing way better than everybody else. I sat him down for a 45-minute talk, and we talk about nothing but recruiting. Walk through that entire process. And really, here's the key to it, too. Like, so many people, you know, you've been to a conference where you've heard this really great idea, and you're super pumped up, and you're so excited, and you go back to your hotel room, you sit in front of the little tiny desk, and you pull out a pen and paper, you're like, let's do this. And you're like, but how? Like, I don't know how to do it, right? Like, it's a cool idea, but I don't know how to do it. So jam sessions, it's number one. It's by industry leaders, someone who's actually doing it right now. Occasionally, we'll have a marketing person on there. Occasionally, we'll have software, but they have to have unbelievably good content.
Sure.
And I vet everybody myself, like literally myself. And they have to give actionables. So, like, if they're going to talk about, you know, how recruiting, they better give you the ad that they used. They have to. They're going to give you where they put it. They're going to give you what spiff program they use. They're going to talk about the referral program or referral fee or sign-on bonus. They're going to talk about where they did. They're going to talk about the results that they did. They're going to give you 100% actionable so you could leave that jam session and have everything. And right now we're actually taking it a step further. So we're developing worksheets for this, checklists, you know, key takeaways, trying to make this as turnkey, as simple as possible to make you really, walk away from that jam session, like not just knowing what's a good idea, but knowing how to do it and really being able to implement it later that day.
So, because I think that you have to have those tactical things in place that you can physically check the boxes on, because we talk about this all the time. And if you look on one of these walls in here, it'll say, you know, you have to, I mean, in this office.
Yeah. There's, I'm looking around.
There's shit everywhere in these offices.
All I see is a bridge.
Different motivational speeches. But everybody goes to these meetings, no different than I've done, you know, so thousands of keynotes and breakouts over the tenure of doing this thing.
Yeah.
And 5% actually do something with what I told them to do, even though I've proven that it works. So their ambition is there. Like they walk out, they've got like 3 pages of notes and they're like, oh yeah. And then they walk out and they don't do anything.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And here's the thing. Like I give all the actionable, right? Do you think everybody does it? Of course not. Like I'm trying to get from 5% to 25%, 30%, right? And like some things you don't have to do. Like it's your business. You decide what you do and what you don't do.
Yep.
But if you love the idea and you think it'll work, which by the way, I already know it works, but you know, every business is different. Some things work for some businesses that don't work. I don't understand why, but it's true.
It's
right?
not straight apples to apples.
No, it can never be, right? Anybody who suggests everybody do this one thing, like I think that's really short-sighted.
Completely agree.
But you know, if I could get 30% of them to do it, like that's a gigantic win, because 30% of figuring out recruiting or marketing or building systems or how to build customer experience, these aren't like $10,000 differences. These are multi, I could tell you, for us, it's not a, you know, a $500,000 difference. It's how we got from 6 to 120. It's not like these are compounding over time. They become more and more valuable. And when you get it down, man, it makes a difference. It really does. Not a small thing.
So there's so many different things that we could take away from just that part of the conversation, but you just mentioned this on the path from 6 million to 140 or wherever you're going to be, 150. Tell me about some of the more memorable things that you did early in that were like big breakthroughs, or do you have any campaigns you ran or things that kind of stood out that maybe you didn't think was going to work and then, oh my gosh, this worked. Like, what are some of those things?
I know one.
Go for it.
I mean, the Melvin one is pretty good.
Yeah, the Melvin one was very good.
And you got
good.
That from we stole a pizza
it. We
place.
Stole it from a company in Cincinnati that was doing that. It wasn't trademarked. They didn't do as nearly as good a job of doing it. But yeah,
we
stole that idea. Just for people who don't know, Melvin was like a campaign that Paul and I came up with. It essentially was like the anti-Parker & Sons. It's the guy that everybody fears in their house. I mean, by the way, customers think this anyway, so like we just took it on head on.
But
it's the guy that comes to your house that makes a mess, that, you know, is dishonest, like charging for something that's not there, you know, doesn't give great customer experience,
looks
shows up late,
dirty.
Looks dirty, right? That anti-Parker & Sons. And we did it in such an extreme way where like there's no one that actually thinks we're talking
exactly,
about a competitor. When I say like he's out, like he's stealing someone's soup on the table, right? Like people don't do that. I would hope, but you know, kind of that extreme thought process. And really, marketing is really about being memorable. You can forget everything else if you could be memorable and different. That's how you do it, and it plays well with who Parker & Sons is. Parker & Sons, we're a family business, straight up, like not exaggeration. We are a family business, and we take care of each other. Like family, our number one priority is our team members. Our team members' number one priority is the customer. We believe in providing an amazing service, not just for our end customers, but for our team members, because I feel like they're my customer, right? Mm-hmm. And that plays well because immediately after this horrible Melvin experience, we talk about what we're like, which, by the way, is the, hey, we're going to do whatever it takes. We're going to stand behind our work. We're going to go the extra mile, which, by the way, also means we're not the, you know, cheapest in town. We give a good quality service at a really reasonable rate, a very competitive rate. But like we're not trying to go after those, you know, be that low price leader, because that's a race to the bottom, right?
Do you remember? Wait, how old are you? I'm 40. How old are you?
35, man.
Shit. Okay. You're going to remember this. Do you? So Kmart.
Yeah.
So
do I remember Kmart? Yeah, I do. Yeah.
So, okay. Do you know who Kmart is? See, Kyle.
Oh
know.
My God. I'm so old.
So you're welcome.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a couple, I don't remember if it was last year or the year before, I did a breakout at Lennox Live, and it was trying to create a memorable experience with your brand.
Right.
And then somebody that did a great job of that, even though it ultimately ended up failing because of execution, the brand was memorable, was the Ship My Pants commercial. Do you remember that?
I do.
Yeah,
I'll
ship my pants, Dad. Hey, can I ship my drawers? Can I ship the bed?
You know, that was a, like, that company was more or less on, like, the edge of going out of business, right? And the marketing team put that together kind of as a joke, like, just like, yeah, it's funny. Like, they'll never run with this. And then they agreed to it. And it's like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
Like, well, now we have to actually do this. This is, they didn't believe in the idea at all.
Well, and it ended up having all sorts of problems with the site. And like, oh, yeah. And it was like, so even though as brilliant of it, this is a perfect example of your brand being amazing, but then not being able to execute.
Oh, yeah.
It was awesome. And so that commercial is something I remember because as a kid, I'm like, oh, he said ship my pants, you know, because I could say ship my pants then.
Yeah, and not get in trouble.
And not get in trouble. But that was one of those things that's memorable. And the Melvin campaign, the Melvin effort was brilliant.
Well, thank you.
I mean, it was so good.
Thank you. I appreciate
that. And you know it because it was so over the top is what makes it memorable. It's like it creates a different, you know, it creates a different emotion, which makes things memorable. Like when you see a car crash, you don't forget it because it's so like it creates this different emotion that triggers those reminders in you. And I always challenge people that in your, when we'll talk about our different like five P's of marketing, we'll talk about, you know, putting out your promotion or your price, you know, whatever you're going to do to, as a hook. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to put your place where you're actually doing business. You want to put your product, what you do, you know. Mm-hmm. But also one thing that people forget is personality. Like, give your business a personality. It's okay. Because otherwise, you're like 99% of everybody else fighting for the same thing. Like, be unique. And that's what made the Melvin campaign so brilliant. So what are some other things that you've done or that you can think of that you have done?
I mean, we got really good. I mean, the first thing we did has nothing to do with marketing, but I'll touch back on marketing. The very first thing we did was try to make more money off the customers we're getting because in the beginning, we just didn't really have money for marketing. So I think one of the easiest and most successful ways to grow your business is to make more money off the customers that you're getting.
So increase your average transaction?
Average transaction number. I mean, there's three ways to grow your business, right? It's the number of transactions, meaning, you know, how often they use you, how much they spend with you. And I'm blanking the third one. Holy crap.
So actually, I bet you I can fill in the gaps for you.
There you go.
Are you ready?
Yep.
It's going to be consistency, frequency, and longevity.
Oh, see, that's marketing. That's marketing. That's a totally, yep.
Okay.
We can talk about that too.
Okay. All right. So it could tie together.
Yeah, So really, it was about getting the most money off every single customer without being dishonest, obviously, right?
Of course.
But once we had that money, then we all of a sudden had money to market. And then every call we brought in was worth more money, right? So we got really good at marketing at one point.
Cross-selling,
cross-promoting, you know, making offers, just opening our mouths. You know, I mean, really, that's the secret. It's just asking, talking about things, and leaving it up to them to decide, right? But yeah, we got really, really good at marketing. At one point, our cost per acquisition was just around $12.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, a good number is like 70, 80. That's a good number. It's not an amazing number.
Now, are you talking HVAC or plumbing or just
yes.
like all? Okay.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Yeah. All the above mixed in. I mean, a plumbing call is slightly more expensive because it's worth slightly more. Obviously, HVAC, like, and I'm not saying like $12 in the middle of summer either, by the way.
Right,
I'm saying $12 for the year.
I understand.
Like, it was cheaper in the middle of summer.
Jeez.
Which is insane, right? Like, how much can you market? If your average call is $12, like I do that all day, every day.
Course.
Now I just got to fill trucks and build systems behind to make sure we don't, you know, trip over ourselves.
So you don't Kmart yourself.
So we don't Kmart ourselves for people who know what Kmart is apparently. But yeah. I do a whole pitch on that. You want me to go into the pitch about the guaranteed way to win in marketing?
So I do because I think that there's the whole goal is to give listeners tactical takeaways that, will require sweat equity, right? So even if you don't have like all this capital, there's things that you can do and things that you have to do if you genuinely want to scale this thing. So
I'm making notes, man.
Okay, so I listened to you talk about your consistency, frequency, and longevity, and we talk about them here in a different manner, but it's the same thing. It's a system. It's a process that you figured out that you have to grow and to grow profitably, which is the purpose of this podcast, is to give some of those tips and tricks. So I say, unless Paul has something else to chime in on, that we just jump right into that piece of it. You good? You good, Tall Paul?
Let's go. Let's do this.
He's super busy. He's about to do some brawny paper towel commercials. so So I'm not sure if his opinion matters. No, I'm just playing. Sorry, Paul. I love you.
Actually, you're right. Yeah, that is like a brawny ad right there, except he's not so brawn, but he is 6'8".
Yeah, he's like, it's like the Canadian version.
Oh, yeah. Brawny,
I
eh?
Like it.
Yeah. Anyway,
yeah, you bet.
Sorry.
That's a shout out to our Canadian listeners.
Sorry. Anyway.
Moving on.
So there's three things that work in marketing, and they work without fail, like without exception. And that's consistency, longevity, and frequency. So meaning you have a consistent, similar message on brand, on topic, makes sense for a long period of time on multiple channels, meaning TV, radio, direct mail, internet. You're putting it everywhere, right? So consistency, longevity, and frequency, it is literally a guaranteed way to win in marketing. Zero risk.
Do you hear that, listeners? Literally a guaranteed way.
Yeah.
That's what I heard.
Literally, like guaranteed. There's only one major flaw with it. And it's a pretty big flaw. All three of those things are expensive. They're really expensive. Like to run a campaign for a long time, that costs money. To run on multiple channels, that costs money. And the consistent message doesn't really cost money, but it's all part of the process.
Wait, right? So you're saying that there's no secret sauce that just makes it happen one, month, 2 months, three? What?
Yeah, well.
It's a miracle.
But there is. There is actually a secret sauce.
Okay, all right.
Because the thing is, like, all three things, and let me prove this too, right? And I'm going to, oh, this is going to be bad. I'm going to do it anyway.
Okay, I love it.
Let's go. A really good friend, a friend of the family, Ken and Phil Husto. I don't know if you know who they are in San Diego. They own a company called ASI Hastings. Huge company, super successful.
Familiar with the name.
Brilliant, brilliant businessman. Love them to death. Great people. I want to prove how consistency, longevity, and frequency work.
Okay.
Their big, brilliant idea, and like they have great marketing around this. But their original idea was for an air conditioning company, they're the white glove guys. That's it. Like, is that some like unbelievably, oh my God, that's life-changing. No. It's not. It's a simple idea. But if they consistently do it, what does that mean to them, right? What does white glove service mean? It means like they're going to go above and beyond, and they built an image and a brand out there with consistency, right? And they ran it for a super long time. By the way, it didn't work well in the beginning, which almost no marketing that's a branding base does, right? And then they did on multiple channels, right? And all of a sudden, I mean, I know they did a jam session for us, right? And they added plumbing. So they were all AC. They did some solar. They added plumbing. They went from zero plumbers to 10 million plumbing in like just over a year.
That's
like, do you think that branding works? Yeah, it works.
Absolutely.
Like I talk about this, like at some point someone's going to take me up on this and I'm going to laugh so hard, but it's going to work. It's like, we're going to be the overalls plumber or the overalls AC guy. And that's our whole brand. I'm like, you can make that work if you have consistency, longevity, and frequency, right?
Right.
I just Googled them and it's just white gloves everywhere.
Everywhere.
Like, you can see, man, it's brilliant.
It's so thanks simple. For sharing that. So simple. Now they may be upset that I said that, but
they're like,
I love you guys. Sorry.
You start seeing white gloves.
But yeah, so you don't have to be brilliant. You just have to be different enough, right? That's memorable. But there is a way to do that without costing a ton of money, right? And it's really thinking about being a big fish in a small pond. Like, I am a big fan, a big believer that you do not do marketing, period, unless you can own it. Don't dabble because that's what everybody else does, and dabbling inevitably will fail. Like, if you're going to do something, do it. I do that not just in marketing, but in life. Like, anybody that knows me, I tend to be obsessive. Like, I saw your ping pong table out there. We have an office in downtown Phoenix. There's a ping pong table there. Like, I started playing ping pong like 2 months ago. Now I play ping pong like 30 minutes a day of practice serves. I'm freaking ridiculous.
Well, then before you leave.
Yeah, I'm going to beat
you. Mono and mono. Yeah, okay, I'll smoke you and then you can leave.
But so you got to be a big fish in a small pond. You have to own it. Meaning when you first start a business, you don't have an unlimited budget. We didn't have an unlimited budget. It's not unrealistic. Business would be super easy if you had unlimited amounts of money to throw at, right?
Yep.
But that's not how it works.
Exactly.
So you have to buy and own something you can afford. So there's a few ways to do that. I mean, you could do it geographically. So I tell people this all the time. If you're a real small business, you should own things geographically, meaning you don't own all of Phoenix. You own a neighborhood,
right?
Or a few neighborhoods. And what does that mean, right? What does owning a neighborhood mean? It doesn't mean I do calls there occasionally. It means like, hey, I try to hire techs in that neighborhood. I geofence that neighborhood and I do digital marketing, right? I do direct mail to that. I do door hangers. When my techs aren't busy, I'm driving through that neighborhood, sitting around right around that neighborhood, right?
So like full immersion
like
in the neighborhood.
Like just merge, own that neighborhood. Once you get a large enough market share in there, which by the way, you can never have 100%. Don't think that's realistic because it's not.
Right.
You get 30, 40%. You know what you could do? You could pull up and move to the next neighborhood. And by the way, you'll lose some business, but not a significant amount. You lose a small percentage of that business and all of a sudden you have a brand new market, sure. Right? There's companies that this is like a big part of their strategy. They literally move offices every 3 or 4 years because what happens when you have an office right in there, you tend to own the area right around because people see trucks coming in and out.
Right.
Because you tend to do things in that neighborhood, right, in that area. So owning geographically is one of the easiest ways to do it as a small business, right? You could also do it with venues. When I say venues, I don't mean like, you know, Diamondbacks Field, right? I mean like owning a smaller median. So here in Phoenix is Arizona in general is a very conservative state, right? There's a ton of money spent on conservative radio, conservative television. You know where almost no one is and it's incredibly cheap? Progressive radio. You want to buy a Democratic station. You could own that really inexpensively. And by the way, someone, especially a year like this with Trump and everything, right? Like, do those people listen casually or are they like fanatic crazy people?
Yeah, they're fanatic. Right. So there's, yeah.
You get to own them.
Yep.
You get to own them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's incredibly valuable. And that's something you can afford to own. You can't afford to own ESPN, but you might be able to afford a small cable channel or a small radio station that's just in your area, or you get the idea.
So we don't, I'm going to ask you this question. So, because we only do digital marketing for the trades. That's it.
Yeah.
But we don't do any traditional.
Right.
So would you say that more like talk radio is better versus music because the intent and the focus is more
in general, like okay. Just like anything else. Like I'm
based off your experience, obviously, but I'm just saying, cause I don't know. And I know you have more experiences.
Talk formats are easier because they're more likely to stay when commercials happen, right? Especially if you get endorsement using the same guy's voice. There's some really cool ways of doing it. But yeah, it does make a difference. I have a software business too, right? Like, so I have a deep digital marketing background too. Right. Not the same as yours, right? Like, I'm not going to do someone's PPC ad. That's not who I am. I don't build SEO. I, you know, run teams that do that, right? Or I'll run your team, right?
Sure.
With Rusty, like now I'm the in-between between you and Rusty, right? But I'm still a big fan of testing and everything, right? So, like, for the most part, I would say top formats work way better. But, like, you don't know until you test. You can make some really strong assumptions, but certain music formats could actually really work. Just make sure it's really aligned with who you are and your brand and your customers. But they're more rare to work than a talk format.
Got it. Hey, one thing I was just thinking of.
Yeah.
And I was looking at my notes, and I don't want to forget it.
Yeah.
Because I'd never heard this of anybody doing this before.
Okay.
And I found this out just by doing whenever I was doing preparation for our meeting.
Yeah.
I like to learn as much as I possibly can about who I'm with and what they're about and things they've done and just anything I possibly can, like immerse myself in this instance in Josh Kelly. So you guys did this marketing campaign with the D-backs.
Yeah.
And it was, if you've ever been to, Paul's never been, but if you've ever been to a bar or a club or any place like this, a sports bar, and you go in the bathrooms and there's the advertising boards up, you know, on the walls or, you know, in the women's restrooms on the stall doors or whatever. People pay for those advertising spots.
Yeah, called Johnny Boards.
Yeah, Johnny Boards. That's it. Thank you. And that was actually, whenever those started happening, I thought that was a brilliant idea because you got focus, at least if only for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
But you took it to the next level.
Yeah.
Can you give us a little, give the listeners and Paul a little taste on what you did with the Diamondbacks?
Yeah, so I met with he's now moved on from the Diamondbacks, but at the time he was one of the head salesmen, eventually became a VP of the Diamondbacks, and they were trying to do business with us, and I was sitting down with him, and a super nice guy, a good friend, and we're going through the process of, like, what he's trying to offer me. He's offering me, like, signs in the field and stuff. I'm like, I don't care about a sign in the field, like, I don't need TV coverage where it helps me in New York. I'm in Phoenix, right? And I got to pay for that then, right? Which just doesn't make sense. We're going through all this stuff. I'm like, and I don't do anything I can't own. And we started thinking about, like, different ways we could own it. And I'm like, what about the bathrooms? That ties directly to our business. We have plumbing, right? It ties directly. What if I own the bathroom? He was like, what does that mean? So we went and we looked through the Diamondback Stadium. And they had Johnny Ports, right? And we're going through the process. And like, what if I took over the bathrooms, took down the giant boards, and I got to do whatever I want in here? Within reason, like everything will be approved. Do whatever I want. By the way, by doing this, the only price I had to beat was Johnny Boards. So I got to set my price. Do you think they make a lot of money from Johnny Boards? I don't want to say the numbers or anything like that, but like, it's way, 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 way less than you think it is. It's one of it at the time when we first did it, it was one of the cheapest things I'd done in such a large scale. So what I did is I own the bathroom, meaning if you were to go to the men's restroom and you're going to use a urinal, there's a personal sign right in front of you that has a message, a joke, some information about Parker and Sons, and each urinal is different. I have undivided attention 30 seconds, two or three times a game.
Love it.
Right? And I actually seen, this is crazy, but I've seen people switch stalls because they want a different message. Not like midstream, by the way, but like in between, like, oh, I was there, let's go this one. By the way, if you're, this is men and women's, right? If you're going to use an actual toilet, when you close the door, guess what you're staring at? Eye level, sitting down, a message from Parker and Sons, different one each one. It's a message. It's a joke. It's a little story, right?
And there's nothing else to focus on.
There's nothing else to focus. It's inappropriate to look anywhere else, right? Then after you're done, you walk yourself up to the sink. Guess where I am? I'm on top of the mirrors, right? And then you go to dry off your hands. Guess what? I'm on the dryer. By the way, when you walk in and walk out, you got a big Parker and Sons sign, right? Nobody in that bathroom is going to not know or see Parker and Sons. They literally did a study, right? And it's called Chase Field. Chase Field is the number one partner. If they did like study, like who's the person that comes up most when you think about the Diamondbacks? Chase was number one partner. We were number two. And there's people paying tens of millions of dollars for this advertising. And I'm paying like, I'm not even paying six figures.
So was this your idea?
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. Man. Well, think about it too, right? So like there's some people coming out of town. Those aren't valuable to me, right? But there's home, you know, people that live here that go, and there's season ticket holders where I own them 82 times a year, three or four times every game, undivided attention. Like, where else can you buy that? That's not even the best deal I've ever done, by the way. Like, I've had some crazy good deals, but that's just being different. And being
keep
creative.
Going.
Yeah. Can you share?
Keep going. I want to hear the next.
Can you share a couple others?
So I'll do the two most successful campaigns of all time, but these aren't repeatable, though.
That's okay.
The problem.
But I think the takeaway is the creativity of the idea versus the takeaway. So it's thinking outside the box, yeah, and then actually doing something with it.
Yeah. So I'll do this one's related because it was also owning a bathroom to a point. Arizona State. I went to ASU. I had a good buddy. His name was Matt Morgan. He was the VP of marketing Fry's. Now he's over Kroger and doing amazing things. And I got a call from him one day. Say, hey, we're going to sponsor this tailgate. Arizona is pretty hot, obviously. And he goes, hey, but part of this tailgate, it's just too hot. We need to get some misters in here. Would you be willing to do a trade with ASU to do some misters? And I'm like, yeah, I would do that. I would do that in a heartbeat. By the way, we had never done misters at that point. He's like, yeah, can you come down today and come take a look? I'm like, yeah,
I'll be there.
Absolutely. I'll be right there. And I literally pulled up an old school phone book. I don't know why. I think it's because I was still like buying phone book at the time. It wasn't that many years ago, but it was enough. And I literally looked up a misting company. I called him. I had him meet me in the parking lot. I literally told him, I go, if you speak at this meeting at all, you won't be hired. I will make sure you don't get hired. Like, I will bad name. Like, you don't speak. You just follow me around and take notes. Like, and this guy did. He didn't do a single word, right? So we go through. And they're showing me this big lattice. It's like a 30-foot high lattice that we're going to put misters on. And he's saying, here's where we want the pump. And I'm like going around taking notes. I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. We could do that. Okay. Yeah, maybe that. And like, I have no idea what the hell I'm talking about. No idea whatsoever, right? So we go through this whole process. And I go, so what are you willing to do for a trade? And he goes, well, find out how much it is, but we'd be willing to give you some season tickets, some basketball tickets. We'll give you all the bathrooms. And then ASU, we'll do some digital stuff for you. We'll be up on the Megatron and everything. Like, I'm like, okay, let me go back and think about this. So let me just write up a proposal and we'll kind of come back. I went out to the parking lot and I talked to this guy. I go, like, how much is this going to cost me? Like, if I had you do it and you're going to wear a Parkinson's uniform, how much does that cost me? And he's like, I could do it for probably $15,000, $16,000. I'm like, okay, I'm going to get back with you. So I literally went back. And I told the guy, like, hey, it's going to be $45,000 in trade. Here's what it's going to be. Here's what I want. And I wrote up this whole deal. And then I took it a step further, and I reached out to the guy that I had in the parking lot's manufacturer. I said, hey, by the way, we're going to probably go into misters, because if our name's going to be all over this misting system and all over this tailgate and all over ASU, like, we should probably do misting systems, but we don't know how to do it. We're going to need some training. Are you willing to donate all the equipment and parts and send a couple guys over here and train my guys and essentially do this job for me and teach my people, right? So I literally made money on that deal.
So do you think that they did that because of the, because of it being Parker and Sons? Like, do you think that there was some?
No. They did that because I knew Matt Morgan and because I got lucky and I was the first one to say yes.
Got it.
ASU was not allowed to come out of pocket because of like regulations they're under, right? Because that's not like everything has to be pre-approved. So like they could give away advertising, but they couldn't come out of pocket. So I was just the first person to say yes.
So you got in the misting systems business?
We don't really do a whole lot of misters, but yeah, we have really nice misting systems business. We do maybe, you know, 10 to 15 of them a year, and they're really high end. It's not that rubber stuff you get at Home Depot. Yep. It's like legit stainless steel, super nice pump. Good. I have one in my house. It's amazing.
So have you ever heard of, our guest last week was a guy named Bobby Jenkins, who's out of Austin,
Texas.
Yeah,
I know Bobby.
You know Bobby?
Yeah.
So, we were talking to Bobby about like adding services because he has like 50 that he does.
Yeah.
And he was talking about how he gets into them. And it reminded me, is that Ron DuPaul of when he was talking about how he wasn't in the misting system thing and then I put him into it. Like sometimes you don't plan to get into that, you know, that offering, but something like that comes up. And
in general, we're pretty systematic. So that's the only time it's ever happened.
Sure.
Everything else, like we, once again, we don't dabble, right? Like we go all in. So misting system was just like, if we're going to do this and get all this advertising and get paid for doing it, we might as well like offer it. We don't really cross promote it. We don't really push it. It's not a big deal. We don't do that many systems a year. But if someone asks, we can do it.
Yeah.
We're capable of it.
And this is a pretty good market for them.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to get into it.
For people who don't know what misting system is, if you're outside of Phoenix, it essentially sprays like high pressured water. And since it's so dry here, it can make like a 10, 15 degree swing difference. It's gigantic.
Would you say most every restaurant that has outdoor has them, right?
Here in Phoenix, for sure. But outside of Phoenix, like no one, what the hell are you talking about? If you're in Louisiana, misting systems is like the worst thing in the world.
Because of the humidity.
Because the humidity. It's like, now I'm just wet. I'm wet and hot. How's that helpful?
Amusement parks have them, and they're awesome. They make a big difference. So no one can hear me do this, but I'm just sitting here smiling and shaking my head thinking like, why don't people think of these things? It's amazing. And you made money doing it. And you got the advertising.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So the other one that was like, see, these are extreme though. Like we have wins. To be clear, right? Like marketing is not extreme. It's not home runs. It's singles and doubles consistently. That's how you grow your business. These are home runs, but like don't plan on or like you trip on these and you just have to be willing to say yes. I'm in a position in life a lot of times because I just decided to say yes and figured it out and made it legit right away. I didn't fake it. I didn't say, hey, we're expert in misting systems. I literally went in and immediately after we got the job, I told them exactly what was going on. And we're very honest up front. They didn't care. They couldn't pay for the misting systems anyway. What's the difference to them?
But you said yes.
Yeah, I said yes.
It's, we have a, I don't know if you follow Gary Vaynerchuk at all. He's a partner of ours. So Gary V, remember we met with them. And so my wife is our COO and she's adverse to risk adverse and I'm very high risk.
Me too.
So we sit in like, I don't remember which meeting it was. You might even remember this, Kyle, it was like music to my ears. Cause he had said, just say yes. Like don't go at it like half-ass, but just say yes and then figure it out. Like if somebody's asking for something, like perfect example is for years, we never offered social media, which is why I partnered with, was able to get a partnership with Gary was to help build that, but not half-ass it.
Yeah.
So, but it was just say yes. You remember that, Kyle? That's when she flipped me off. Was that the first one? Yeah. Which was music to my ears because you know, we're kind of the same way as if an opportunity like that comes up and you can connect the dots, like it makes sense.
Yeah.
Say yes and do it. And that's what I'm taking away from like this creative, you know, the creative things that you're just talking about. So go ahead and go on with
we've had a lot of successes, but like this one sticks out to me because it's just so dirty. It's amazing. We did something called what we called an OPM mailer, which meant other people's money.
Not OPP.
No, OPP. Down with OPP.
OPM.
OPM, other people's money. So what we did is we sent out, I don't know how many, we'll call it 20,000. I don't remember the exact number. 20,000 mailers. And we had this really good hook. And it was about, you know, getting rebate money, right? Getting other people's money to pay for your system, right? It was this long form letter, just one page. But in the front of the envelope, it said, OPM mailer, don't throw away literal cash inside. And we literally put a dollar bill in every single direct mail piece. Like literally a...
So $20,000.
$20,000 in cash plus the cost of it, right? Here's the really cool part. Do you think I paid that $20,000 in cash plus it? I co-opted from two different companies. I did a water softener ad on there, and I did an HVAC system. I got 50% co-opt by both, including the dollar. And we bought a list, right? Which, by the way, they paid for. Right?
Yeah.
And we mailed out to all these people, right? Number one, we had gigantic success with it. It was huge. The open rate, when you literally put a dollar bill in, we know a lot of those dollar bills got thrown away.
Of course.
But a lot more got opened, than they normally would have,
and
right?
It wasn't your money. So.
Here's the crazy part, right? So we bought a list, so not every address we got was perfect. So we got like 1,000 freaking envelopes back. With $1 bills, and we're like, we got to pay somebody to open all these envelopes with all this cash in it now. Like, well, this is unforeseen benefit problem, right? But so this is like the most expensive mailer of all time, except I didn't have to pay a single cent of it.
That's fantastic.
And by the way, just for reference, like the HVAC manufacturer that we did with and the wire heater loved it because we sold a ton of systems and wire heaters. Way more than we would have done normally. So that's kind of an outside the box too. Like that'd be hard to pull off now because they're a little bit more aware after maybe I snuck that by. But
worth the shot, listeners. Yeah, worth the shot.
Go for it.
How bad do they want to keep your business?
Go ahead and send me one of them too, just as a reference.
I'll test it out for
you.
Yeah. So did you put like, so was the offer specific to the manufacturer? Have to approve the offer?
They approved the offer. Okay. And then like we told them, hey, we're going to put a dollar bill in this. And like, so they were all for it and it worked. So to me, like they should always be all for that.
So I love that. So actually that's a good segue into, before we leave like the marketing phase of this is, I want to talk about it's a two-parter. I want to talk about branding and I want to talk about direct response.
Right.
So, 100% a market correction is going to come.
I mean, it's a matter of time.
It's going to come. And we believe branding has never been more important.
Yeah.
Never been more important than it is like right now and even coming up. So if you will you share like your vision on direct response and branding?
So a lot of people have this, as marketers especially, like have this bad habit. I know you guys aren't like this, right? But like the digital marketing firm will tell you like, hey, branding's not trackable. You shouldn't be doing it. Right. Like you go through and smaller, you know, untested companies will fall for that.
Right.
And it's just not good. It's just not good business to think that way. The truth is, if you're going to be successful in business, you better have branding down and direct marketing.
Agreed.
Branding is that long-term approach. And when I say branding, I mean like television, radio, building a long-term nurture, SEO, things like that. Things that grow legs and keep walking, right? Things that you do today has more value 6 months, a year, 2 years, 10 years down the road, right?
Right.
And these are things that give you sustainable growth, right? You don't have to buy the customer every time. Direct marketing are things like PPC, telemarketing, direct mail, where you're trying to literally buy a customer one time. Super important too.
In and out.
Because it's a lever. That's the big thing people don't pay attention to, is the lever. A lot of people run PPC and they run the same budget every single day. That's crazy.
Right.
If you're busy tomorrow, turn off the PPC.
Turn it off.
If you need more calls tomorrow, you better turn it on, right? Like basic common sense stuff, no one does it, right? So your direct marketing is what keeps the lights on. Your branding is what makes you actually sustainable and grow. And actually, just so you know, is the only thing that makes your business worth any real value. If you don't have a brand and you're all purchasing customers, you'll never get a good evaluation.
So can I get your opinion on something real quick?
Yeah.
Before we leave that piece? So I believe and I've always believed that if you're running an aggressive PPC campaign, even SEO campaign,
yeah,
you're also essentially branding yourself too, because
to a point.
Searches are happening. So yes, you're getting a direct lead, but there is some branding aspect to that. Not that I would say, hey, if I'm going to do a branding campaign, I'm going to do this. I'm just saying there is a little crossover there that can be helpful in addition to its main purpose of lead generation.
Yeah. I mean, I think SEO is a branding play 100%. PPC, I think is kind of a branding play because you're getting your name out there a lot. But the difference is you have to pay every single time to get there
right.
to be that top of mind.
Right.
It's hard on a PPC campaign where you are the same as the company below you, it's hard to stick out, and which makes it hard to be really effective at branding. However, it still has some branding value. I would never consider that a branding piece.
Right. No, I was only thinking it is 100% a direct response focus, a lead gen focus. There's just a subsidiary of that that allows a little bit of branding, because if you're putting it up there enough, people are seeing it.
Yeah, people seeing you constantly. The biggest reason I don't consider it branding is like, no matter what you put in that copy underneath, you can't stand out and be memorable compared to the company.
No, I agree. Yep.
Right. Completely agree. Once they get to the website, that's a totally different thing, right?
Yep.
On that Google page or, you know, Bing if you're crazy, it's pretty hard to stick out. You just have to be there, right? Yeah. And hope that all the other branding that you did makes you stick out.
So this is where you're 100% spot on there. You're right, because that is the way it is. One thing of having us been and only doing this for now 12 years.
Yeah.
Good Lord, 12. Yeah, it's 12 years. Is we've written thousands upon thousands of pay-per-click ads because everybody wants the most amount of leads for the least amount of money. So that means these things got to convert. I got to get the cost per click down. And so we've written everything across that you can think of and then funneled those things down, which is where the value comes in from Rhino, is that people will try to, I get an LOI sent to me, somebody wanting to buy me to get the data information, maybe even our negative keyword list. But we've learned, like, okay, I also need to start protecting my brand, because people will pick it. Like, people bid on Rhino all the time.
Oh yeah.
And people will bid on Parker and Sons. People bid on those things. And so it's
always worse too. Like, I've had this and I had a few conversations. We won't name names, but they'll bid on Parker and Sons, and then their name and the title will be Parker and Sons, and then it's like some other company underneath. I'm like, dude, you can't do that.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if you buy my name. Like, I can't stop that.
But don't put my name in there.
Yeah, don't put my name and deceive customers, you know?
Yeah. And you know what's funny about that is it doesn't make sense to do it anyway, because once they get there, you've immediately deceived them and the trust is gone. It's off. So I would say,
yeah, but it also hurts us.
It also hurts us. Absolutely. So it maybe ever works out 0.00001 time ever. But we have customers ask us that. What if we just bid on, maybe not using like the name directly, but I mean, we never used to run pay-per-click ads for our customers, because why would I want to pay for it? They're doing a direct search for their name anyhow, with the exception of now.
You have to a little bit to protect
your, like, to just make sure that you're popping up ahead of them to protect yourself.
It's also cheap when you're buying your own name. So, like, it's like remarketing, right? Like, you know, following, and I call them like cyber stalking someone, right? It's like, some people don't like that. Like, you know what? It's so freaking cheap. Who cares?
Yeah.
Like, it costs you so little. And if it generates it, to me, marketing is about efficiency, right? Push comes to shove, being memorable, all this stuff, that what you're actually debating on whether it works or not is on efficiency. How much money did I put in? How many calls did I get out there actually booked calls? A lot of people do it ROI. I'm actually not a big fan of that because I think it convolutes and makes it confusing. I've seen campaigns that didn't do crap, but you got one install, it made it look really good, and it's not a real number, right?
Metric, yeah.
It's not a real metric because that was your luck.
Right.
So how much money did you put in? How many calls, like booked ran calls, did you generate from that, right? With digital side, it's really extremely about efficiency, right? But radio is the same way too. Like, it's hard to compare radio directly to, you know, a PPC campaign, because they hear you on radio and then they go to PPC. But you better believe I could compare one radio station to another, and one TV station to another. You know, like, these are all, you make this trackable A/B test, all the basic digital marketing, like,
right.
The techniques that we did 15 years ago are so outdated. You got to think of stuff we're doing right now that's outside of our industry, like everybody else is doing. Think of the most competitive, the most successful, the most tracking, the least, you know, risk businesses. What are those? What do they do in their business every day? And why can't we be doing some of that?
Right.
And we do. We do now, right? There's huge companies. Huge companies didn't exist when I got into the business, right? If you wanted to be $100 million, you had to be a Roto-Rooter and have 100 locations.
Would you say that Parker & Sons is top five residential add-on replacement and service?
I think for one city, because there's like a horizon, which is in like three major
Northeast
cities.
Yep.
They're bigger than us. But for single city, I believe we're the largest in the United States.
That's awesome, man.
I think by quite a bit, too.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. And by the way, we only have a 7% market share. So, like, that's craziness.
That's what blows my mind, is that you do so much, and maybe you'll share what the percentage of what the percentages should be. Actually, it doesn't even matter, because it's going to vary. of your percentage of marketing spend, but it still blows my mind.
We spend about 5%.
Okay. So, but it's 5% of 100 and
yeah, it's a big number.
So it does vary.
Yeah.
But the fact that you're still spending that and that, I mean, living here in Phoenix, I see it often. Now I also understand that I pay more attention.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Cause it's my world too. But to only have 7% seems like how, you know, but that's how I think that you can get in the mindset of like, oh, I'm everywhere. I know everybody. And like, well, people will say, you know, I've been in business here for 80 years, man. Everybody knows me.
Yeah. No, nobody knows you.
No, they don't.
No. I like people tell me that like marketing people, especially like you get like an event or whatever, like, yeah, they know you. I'm like, dude, nobody knows me. Like 7% use us. I would say maybe 15% could say our name unaided, aided maybe 30 to 40%. Like the vast majority of people, if you said Parker and Sons, they'd be like, what the hell is that?
Well, you know this. So because if everybody knows you, then why when I go to this Google keyword tool, it says 14,720 people typed in AC repair. Why didn't they type in Parker and Sons? Why are they looking for AC repair? They know Parker and Sons. You know, and that's just one example, but it's just, we have to prove that point often. Now it helps when you have that consistency and the frequency and keeping your brain in front of all those things.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it works. It's a guaranteed way, man.
Guaranteed way to get it done. Now I want to move on real quick. And we can touch on this as much as you would like.
Yeah. I'm an open book, man. So okay. Like literally ask questions and I'll give you answers.
So, I want to move on to,
not that I can answer that. I was playing.
Okay. Never mind. I'm sorry, Chris. I want to move on to, reviews.
Yeah.
Rhino does not currently offer reviews. Now, that being said, I've been approached by multiple companies to want to be a strategic partner of ours to refer them. And we never connect ourselves to anyone unless we feel 100% good about that partnership and the integrity of the company and the integrity of the service itself and things like that.
Yeah.
Because inevitably, I would make a referral, something goes south, and I lose the customer because of a referral I made. That's what pissed me off the most.
Yeah, that's not cool.
If that one happens. So, but I do want to talk about it. And why I want to bring it up is because of the way you went about it.
Right.
So with Review Kangaroo, this was kind of your baby, right?
Yeah.
And you had, if I remember correct, and as from what I heard, is you invited a group of people. I think you guys went to Vegas or wherever you went. Maybe they came in here. But you did that round table thing and said, hey, I've used and tried all these different platforms. I want to create something that I believe has value. Am I close to getting that right?
No, you're pretty much it, right? So the truth is, Review Kangaroo is the software that I own. I have partners. My wife is in, and that's to me. It's the number one for home services. It's not for all businesses. If you're a home service company, it's by far way more effective and way easier to use and the better platform than anything else. The results speak for that, right? Like, I don't want to go into selling it, right?
No, I understand. Well,
but the concept behind it was pretty simple. Like, I used other companies I hired, and, like, I was getting, like, a 2 or 3% response rate. I'm like, this can't be the best it could be. It just can't. Didn't make sense.
Did you find an average there that actually that you could track to on response rate?
For what?
Just review, like you said, 2 or 3%.
Oh, we get up to a 15%.
Okay, great.
Yeah. Yeah, which still seems crazy low, right? Yeah. But, you know, that's way better than 2 or 3.
Absolutely.
So anyway, like I had this issue and I'm like, there's no way I'm the only one with this issue. So I started talking to other people and exactly what we did. We did a round table, kind of sat everybody in a room and said, if we're building the perfect system, the absolute perfect, like we got to make it whatever we wanted, what would that look like? And we wrote it up.
So these are peers of yours also.
These are all large home service companies. So we pulled in, it was mainly HVAC and plumbing, but we did pull in, get a roofer, some pest guys, some people we knew here in Phoenix.
Like, a lot of brilliant minds get it. Yeah.
And like, because the difference between a home service in my mind from like a review standpoint and customer expectation standpoint for a roofing company and an HVAC company, it's practically the same.
Right.
Like the differences are less than 1%.
I'd agree. Yep,
but the difference between that and a restaurant, which is what every other review platform works with, like, are gigantic.
Significantly.
Yeah, like, how you do both of those. I don't get it. They seem to have success and enjoy it. But we wrote up, like, essentially what a perfect system is. I got a partner that I knew could develop it. And I said, here's what I want. Can we do this? And how long and how expensive would this be? And he kind of wrote stuff up, and we honestly started building. Now, that basic program that we had, like, it's gotten more sophisticated than that.
Of course.
But not from like the user side, just on the back end on our stuff and the automation and all the cool stuff associated with it, right? But Yeah, you had to start, like, we were really literally just scratching our own back. Like,
so did everybody that was in the group?
They were all beta testers, and everybody's still in, yeah.
Okay, great. So then you probably were able to come out big with this, because if they're all decent sized players, and like you really tested with like a group of the best guys to test with.
Yeah, but then at the same time, like when we first did, like they all bought into it, so they were going. And then it was like, how do I get, you know, somebody with three trucks to use this system?
Sure.
Right. So there was a big learning curve, yeah, man. And you know, I consider myself a decent business person, right? I could tell you, you know, moving from HVAC and then a marketing firm to software was pretty different.
Yeah.
There was a big learning curve there, just like anybody else. So we had to figure out how to market, how to sell it, and really how to make product changes consistently, right?
So then there's two sides to that coin,
yeah,
with reviews. The advice that we will give is, and that you will know, because I've heard you say this before too, is if you're running 50 calls a day, 500 calls a day, you're bound to get reviews just more often than not. If you're not being proactive about it, you're going, right, to get the wrong reviews. You're,
right,
going to get the negative reviews because something's going to go wrong. You're not going to get them all perfect.
Yeah.
So you got to respond to them. Like, you don't leave them hanging. You got to respond to them, try to resolve it. But do you believe that you can, especially today, and I do believe that this can hit you on both sides of the coin. You can either grow this thing into like, you know, a mammoth using reviews, or you can also die. You know, you can have death by reviews.
Yeah.
So, can you explain like the maybe let's start with how you can really grow your service company by reviews. I mean, because even though like to me, it makes like I don't have to really think about it. Just I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. You get more reviews. That's more credibility. It's more people, you know, that got your back. It's more word of mouth, whatever. But I don't want to assume everybody else knows that same thing.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that first, and then let's talk about the how to avoid the death by reviews piece. Is that cool?
Yeah, that's cool. So I actually throw reviews into like a larger bucket I call social proof. So
I heard you say that, social proof.
Our industry like does not use social proof effectively, and it's unbelievably effective, and like no one knows about it or pays attention to it. Reviews are a big piece of that, but it is not the only piece of it. So many companies really don't even have like a referral program. Like, it's unbelievable. Like, hey, we asked for referrals. I'm like, where, when, how many referrals did you get last month? It's like, I got two. You ran 500 calls. How'd you get two referrals? Right. You don't have a program.
Remember that conversation, Paul?
Yeah. New phone. Who dis?
Yeah. Like referrals, like winning awards, right? When we won the BBB Torch Award, our business jumped. Right. By the way, that award was really easy to win. Like, you know, we won the Ranking Arizona Award 7 years in a row. Guess what? I got to pick the competitors that I got to compete against. Like, it was people I had never heard of. Like, there's no way they're going to win this, right? So social proof is essentially taking someone else's authority, someone else's, you know, they believe them, and taking that authority and put it on yourself, right? So now, because I'm associated with the BBB, even though some people aren't the biggest fans of the BBB, it was a gigantic difference maker in our business, right? Google, Yelp, Facebook, they're all the same thing, right? If Google says you're really good, Google has more authority than Parker and Sons will ever have.
Right.
It's just like, I'm honest about it. Right? Like, which would you rather trust, Google or Parker and Sons? Most people don't know what Parker and Sons, but even the ones that do, like, well, Google does everything.
Well, at scale, Google's larger.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it has more proof.
Larger influence.
Yeah. So reviews are a big piece of that. And really, the key to it is, like, I don't care if you use Review Kangaroo. I don't care if you use whoever, right? But you better be doing something for reviews. Don't just ask at the end of the call and say, hey, you know, would you mind leaving a review walking out the door? Number one, you won't do that consistently. Like, I've never seen it done consistently. Number two, you're not making it easy for the customer. Number three, you're not gonna, even if you are making it easier for the customer by, like, sending him a link, you're not really getting the feedback or the value you could be getting off it. So you need to have a system. By the way, you'll find that, you know, what you could do at 6 million is not what you could do at 120 million. Before, I could talk to each guy and have that conversation. Hey, reviews are really important. 120 million, you know, there's people who don't even know who I am. There's people who don't know who Paul is, right? And he's there in the office every single day. It's just a different animal than it used to be.
Of course.
You know, we got 550 team members now, which is crazy. I do this stat because I think it's fascinating, right? Do you know the circumference of the world? Paul, do you know the circumference of the world?
God, that's a Paul question too.
That's definitely a Paul question.
You guys know, Kyle, do you know the circumference of the world?
22,000 miles.
It's about, it's just under 16,000. It's between 15 and 16,000 miles. Okay. Do you know what Parker and Sons on an average day drives with all the trucks combined? 17,000 miles.
So you're driving over the circumference of the world.
We drive this, if you combine all the trucks, we drive over the circumference of the world every single day. I mean, we did this stat. I was just speaking at like a Fujitsu conference, and our break even every month is $5.5 million.
Oh my God.
How terrifying is that? Like, and that's like last year's number. It's going to be higher this year for sure.
And that's probably,
I don't know what the actual
really
number
hard
is.
For people to fathom. Like,
yeah, that. Meaning if I made $5.4 million in a month, we lost our ass.
Right.
Not a little bit of money, like a lot of money.
Of course.
Not just 100 grand. That's not how that works.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. But yeah, anyway, I've totally got off track.
No.
Reviews. Yeah.
So reviews. So that was on that to help you grow side of things.
Yeah. It's a way to scale that referral that used to be over the fence and make it 1 to 1,000. I mean, the truth is we live in a different world than we used to. Like, I'm not proud of this, but it's just who I am. And I'm not the only one who does this anymore. You know, you go home from work, you pull into your driveway, garage door goes up, you pull in, garage door goes down. You don't talk to your neighbors the same way you used to. You don't talk to when's the last time you asked your parents for a referral on something? Like, it just doesn't happen in the real world anymore. What happens now is they get that referral from an anonymous source on Google. And that, by the way, it could be a real or not real review. We've all lived with that, and it's all a process. Like, if you're not playing in this game and you're not gaining momentum, you will be left in the dust. It's not just about getting bad reviews. Like, if I have 5,000 five-star reviews on Google and you have 50, which one are they likely to call?
Yeah, 5,000.
Yeah.
So, because a lot of times they'll, I mean, that alone just shows like, okay, well, 5,000 people can't be wrong. 50,000, you could fake a lot of that. Like, you could.
I mean,
but I'm saying, like, if you're
it's friends and family, everybody's got the same last name.
If you're trying to, like, you know, 5,000 is hard to fake.
Yeah.
Like, so it's like, okay, yeah, that's legit. So naturally, you would make that decision. There's more credibility.
Yeah, and here's the key to this too. Like, a lot of people don't realize. Like, I call it a hidden dollar too, right? So I do this exercise when I'm talking about this, and they're not really getting it, right? When they use three different companies, one will be Parker and Sons. And I use the real numbers. I found a company called ABC Company that has a lot of reviews, just not a good star rating. And I'll pick a small company with almost no reviews, right? And go through which one of this, based off this information, which company would you use, right? It's like 99% use Parker and Sons. And by the way, that's the only information your customer knows. But I call it hidden dollar because here's the real scary thing if you're not Parker and Sons. That ABC company and that other small company, they don't know this business exists. Because it's not like they call them and say, hey, why don't you have very many reviews? They don't go to the website and look up, like, I'm curious how they didn't get reviews or how they have a bad star rating. You just get ignored. And you never have the opportunity to do that business, period. So you're losing millions of dollars without even being aware that those millions of dollars exist. That's way more painful to me because if they came to the website and they dropped off, like, okay, I know what we have to fix.
Right.
Something's wrong with the website.
Yep.
Something's going on with the conversion. Like, yep. We need to adjust, change, right? If I never get to see that or track it or adjust, what do I do?
Don't have the opportunity at all.
I do nothing.
Nor do you even know that it exists.
Yeah.
Because there was no data to even measure it.
Yeah. The other thing you wanted to ask was death by
reviews? So the death by reviews, like, even today, people will still ignore the reviews and then in the war room or the back room, they'll be like, oh, that was just, a person was upset.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah. That's so, not a real customer. Like, it doesn't matter, man.
Yeah.
You know,
doesn't
like,
matter.
He's being unreasonable. I don't care. It doesn't really matter. Like, it's not, you got to understand when you respond to reviews and you react to reviews, you're almost never responding for that person. That person, sometimes you can turn around and save, and those are your best, most loyal customers, and you should definitely try that. But there's some customers that are just unreasonable, man. And that's just the truth, and it is what it is, and you live with that. But when you respond to those reviews and you try to make it right, you're not just affecting that customer. You're affecting everyone else that sees that bad review. Because if you're responding in a timely manner and you're not playing the blame game, like so many people will say, like, type in, this isn't a real customer. Like, now it's like he versus she. Like,
right.
It doesn't look well. It doesn't play well.
Right.
So, like, take ownership of it. Don't admit fault, but like, hey, I'm sorry for your experience. Like, we never want anyone to experience that way. here's what I like to do. We can't find your information in the system. Can you please call us? Here's my direct phone number. We'd love to fix this for you.
So my wife, when she looks for anything.
My wife, yeah.
Anything. Is she'll go look at reviews and she'll immediately go to the negatives first.
Yeah, there's a certain percentage of people, about 15% of the people do that.
Because she, and that could be again because we're in like this space, but she goes and looks at all the negative, I'm talking everything, man. Like
she's a researcher.
Everything. She'll, like, we're sitting at home, she's looking to buy my son a helmet for his new scooter. And she's looking at reviews.
It's your kid's head, man. It's important.
I get
apparently.
It. I'm not disagreeing with that. There's so many helmets, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
She goes to the negative reviews to see, like, what do they say? You know, what is this? And it's nothing against it. You know, it's actually good that she goes down that. But she looks for what is the negative review? Like, is it one that's of value? And what was the response to the review?
Right.
Not the fight, like, that needs to happen. Like, you're wrong. Like, it's not a pissing match. It's a, how did you handle the review? And, like, is it legit? So...
Yeah, I mean, every company makes mistakes. Like,
of course.
It's inevitable. Trust Absolutely. Me, we make mistakes all the time.
Same. Yep.
I make mistakes personally. Like, that's my specialty. but if you make them right, like, that's more valuable in my opinion.
Name one successful company that hasn't.
One that doesn't exist yet.
Exactly. It's the unicorn.
Yeah.
All right. So I want to, speaking of mistakes and things like that, is... Mm-hmm. Mistakes are inevitable.
Yeah.
We've made them. You have to make them to learn from them and get better. I believe that's what happens. And
yeah. Sometimes you purposely make mistakes.
I mean,
as weird as that sounds, you do.
I understand. And you have to A/B test things like in our world, but I'm talking also human beings. Cause we, have a lot of human beings that work for right now. We're at like 96 or somewhere around there, that number, but we also allow them to make mistakes.
Yeah.
Let leaders lead. And leadership is going to make mistakes, but there's so much value in that mistake on how you learn from it and overcome it, because you don't want that mistake to happen again, but you have to go through it to get through it.
Mm-hmm.
But what are some good, like, my question was, is what would you have done differently to help avoid some mistakes along the way? Now that you know what you know, we're talking 140, 150 mm-hmm. mil later, and I'm talking specifically in this instance on the Parker and Son side of things.
Okay.
What do you tell young JK back in the day to do differently versus where you're at today? Just like one option or a couple options. That's fine.
I mean, number one, I agree with you, by the way, like 100%. You have to have the latitude to make mistakes. Otherwise, creativity gets stifled. Last year, I was, I ran sales and eventually recruiting and business development for literally the largest home service company in the United States. It's a $1 billion company that's trying to Uberize the home services. One of the big issues I had and ended up leaving is, like, there was no room for mistakes, which means there's no room for A/B testing, which means my growth wasn't going as fast as it could have been, right? And the company couldn't grow as fast as it could have been, right?
Got it.
So mistakes are a key part of the process. Like, and when I say you purposely make mistakes, like, I believe any assumption in your business is a danger. And it's a risk. And my job is to set everyone up for success and mitigate risk. And the way I mitigate risk is I test every assumption that I possibly can. There's some like golden assumptions in your business that you can't really effectively test, but way less than what you think. So test everything knowing that, hey, I'm probably going to come back and this was a bad decision and I was right in the first time, but at least now I know. Right?
So a test and invest mentality?
Yeah.
Test and invest.
MVP models, man.
MVP.
Minimum viable product.
Yeah.
Like as crazy as it sounds, like when we first launched Review Kangaroo, like we had an email system and a text system. Everybody thought this was this amazing software that did this. Like, no, we had a dude doing emails and texts to see if people wanted that and if they would buy it and what it should look like. So we did it with manpower. Like, that's such a stupid way of doing it. But like before we did that, if we would have launched with our original idea, it would have failed. And we wouldn't have figured that out. And we would have spent, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars figuring that out, as opposed to paying a guy to do it and figuring it out in a month and costing us a few thousand dollars, right? Anyway, mistakes I've made. I've made lots of mistakes. Part of making mistakes turns you into who you are. I've made some really stupid mistakes. Like, I remember when I first started, this is not a pleasant one. You know, I was right out of college. I didn't have a whole lot of money. We invested money, all this fun stuff, right? and I ran the wrong phone number in a Yellow Page ad. That sucked. And won't make that mistake again, you know. But now I check every phone number like religiously.
I bet you do.
Yeah.
So actually, if you think about that at scale versus from then to today, you made the mistake at the right time.
For sure. For sure I did. 100%. It was still pretty painful.
Absolutely.
So I made stupid mistakes like that.
How long did you get your balls busted for that one?
Oh, I paid for it myself, like, and just came out of pocket, and I wasn't making a lot of money. Brutal. And I didn't have a lot of money at the time, so it was like, I just figured it out. It was rough.
Brutal.
But yeah, it was not like heavily pushed on me, like, you're an idiot.
That's a character.
It was already painful enough. But
Paul
anyway.
Wasn't mad. He was just disappointed.
Yep, which is so much worse.
That's way worse.
So much worse.
Disappointed.
He doesn't get mad. If you know Paul, he's never been mad his entire life. Occasionally gets disappointed.
That
makes
was
you
want to
shrivel up and die.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I've made mistakes like that. I've made the same mistakes everybody else makes. Like, the problems you have at 2 million or 5 million or 10 million or 20 million is the same problems we have today. It's the same. Like, do I have the right people? Like, we certainly had the wrong people in the wrong position, right?
Yep.
And when I say the wrong person, sometimes it's the wrong person, period. Sometimes it's just the wrong position, the wrong motivation.
Yep.
I've made that mistake many times. I will continue to make that mistake. I just got to adjust quickly. Like, I've never been afraid to, you know, push people out that really don't make sense.
Sure.
Right? I don't believe in firing people. I've never fired anyone in my entire life. I've only had them fire themselves. And that's a distinction in my mind that makes me sleep a little bit easier at night.
Yeah, okay. Interesting.
But doesn't mean people aren't let go.
Of course.
So I've made that mistake. I've made the mistake of treating people equally. I'm not a believer in treating people equally. That's counterintuitive to what a lot of people say. I'm a believer in treating people fairly. So there's a big difference between equal and fair.
Agreed.
A person that works, you know, extra hours, does the extra work, is more successful, tries harder, is always open to ideas. That person should not be treated the same as the person who doesn't work those extra 100% hours.
100% agree.
That doesn't do the extra work, that isn't open to ideas, that's always pushing back, that, you know, you have problems with. To treat both of those the same, I think, is unfair.
Completely agree.
I've made that mistake. I will never make that mistake again in my life. That's a big one. I've made lots of marketing mistakes. I've made lots of operational mistakes. But these are all things that you learn from and you grow from. You can't change, because those mistakes often led me to bigger and better ideas. So I don't, like, keep track of mistakes. I'm a pretty positive person. You know what I mean? Like, I don't. Like, here's the 100 things I screwed up this year.
Yeah, you don't want to.
It's only February.
You don't want to dwell on the mistakes. You just. No.
Well, I want it to be painful. I want to sit in it. But I don't want to make a ledger of it, right?
And then move on. Move on.
Yeah, exactly.
I made a few mistakes. And probably one thing that I don't know how much. Because
Paul made a mistake today wearing that shirt, apparently.
And not shaving that 5 o'clock shadow of a stash he's got going on there.
You know what I was just thinking? Why is it okay for you to have the hair under your chin, but I can't have the mustache? Like, it's just, we each have half of a goatee.
Nobody said it. No, I couldn't. I mean, if I shaved it, I have a butt chin. It really sticks out. And you'd be like, yeah, grow that back. That's at least. And ultimately, it's like Anna says, my wife says, leave it. They're like, don't shave it. So I'm kind of like, all right, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and leave it then, if that's fine. If that looks better, I'm in. Sure. Yeah.
Back on the rails.
So,
I think you just made a reference, like, you guys would be more complete as one person. I think is what he's trying to say.
No, well, listen.
You complete me.
Jerry Maguire reference. Wow. Okay. One last piece of this. Now I'm going to tee this up by just talking about from my experience quickly. Rhino, and I'm going to not assume that you know this yet, even though you're working with Michael, and Michael has, like, been a lifer here. So Mike has been with us for 7 years. I actually got shot twice downtown.
What?
Got shot twice downtown, robbed by a 16-year-old kid. He was just downtown, like, going out to, I don't know if it was like a restaurant or something with some of his friends, and he was leaving, walking back to his car, and he got robbed and shot twice by a 16-year-old kid for his phone.
Wow.
So did you know that, Kyle? Well, PJ, now you know, buddy. Paul, you knew that, right?
That's why the office is out in the middle of nowhere now.
So that's why we're up in
the morning. I had to take a helicopter here, people. Not really, but it was.
But kind of.
Yeah.
So he came on board. He was like a server or something like that. Didn't know anything about digital marketing, didn't know anything about the home services. So like 99% of everybody in this building didn't know anything about HVAC or anything like that. But he came in and we started learning the reason he learned so quick here is because we analyze and use data for everything. Now, I'm saying we use intuition on things too as we've gotten smarter, but we use data and measurable things to get better at stuff. So right or wrong, to this day, we have our RhinoTrax reporting team, and that team listens to every single phone call. They're human beings. Like, they're not in India. They're not in Russia. They're like in the United States. They have, they're paid by Rhino. Like, they're our team. They listen to every phone call that comes through that site. Now, I know I could pay for a piece of software that listens to keyword triggers or find another vendor that listens to these things and probably get it cheaper.
Much,
Do not believe it's as same quality.
And no, for sure it doesn't.
And I can't move as fast and make decisions right now if I want to, same day, without having that in place. So to me, it's the longevity of the customer base, which is one of your things you're talking about. But it's we use these metrics to hold them accountable. Like, they have to listen to a lot of phone calls every day, and we have to put parameters around that to understand how to evaluate how is that call listener doing. It's the biggest team at Rhino is our RhinoTrax team. So it's no different than our pay-per-click team. You know, thankfully we have now three ex-Googlers on the team that came from the clicks team, you know, and that's just part of the team. But they're very metrics-driven. So, which is great. So that's one that I don't know as much about pay-per-click as I used to, because back in the day, it was me doing everything, you know, me doing
it's
websites.
It's something, if you're going to do it, that this is why, like, I tell people, like, hey, I want you to run my SEO or PPC. I'm like, to do that, you have to live it every day.
Every
and
day.
That's all you do.
That's it.
And that's not me. So what I'll do is I'll help you run your team or whatever vendor or Rhino, wherever. And like, I know more than enough to keep them accountable.
Absolutely.
And make sure they have success in driving them. You don't want me doing your keywords anymore.
Well, and that's so, but you have to, like, you have to have those metrics in place. So I'm probably more aligned with where you're at, because I'm not doing it either. However, I know what KPIs we have in place to measure how their success, you know, or where they're failing to, and then it's giving them more education or whatever they need to get better.
Right.
But the point is, we're always using metrics and data to scale this thing. And because we've stayed in the trades only, we've never deviated from HVAC, plumbing, electrical. You can't afford to get a black eye in our world. So the metrics were the only thing that we could also use to make sure, like, hey, if you're going to hold me accountable to bring in lead volume for you, I don't want you to come back and be like, hey, Chris, you sucked this month for me. And then we have to guess if we sucked or not. Yeah. So if I track everything, and I can go back and look and say, you know, hey, we did 47 new installs this month that we brought in for you. Here's a name, address, phone number, date, timestamp. Here's a CCR in your instance that took the call was booked. It was a new customer. If I have that for every call that comes through and I sift out the garbage, you know, the stuff that wasn't ours, then it's very black and white. So I can now judge my partnership with anybody who's in part of the Rhino family, any of our customers, based on facts. We have metrics to measure everything. So cost per lead, like you'll get this, and I know you're going to appreciate this. This cost per lead conversation always pisses me off, because what 99% of every other agency considers a lead is not what we consider a lead.
Lead's a booked call.
So.
Period. Anything before that's a prospect. I've had arguments with people about that.
So, but if a call comes in and you booked the call and it was a referral, that's not a new customer. That's a referral. I mean, for me, you're not paying me for that.
Right.
I called it, I booked it. I say, here's a lead for you. We deal with that all the time, but that's a metric that we clear out. Well, what's interesting about that is it's something that we have to go head to head with. Like, people are almost trained to think that a lead is a call or a contact form that comes in that wants to do business, regardless if it's a new customer or not. So we're trying to change this habit by the way we report. And thankfully, you've kind of got to go through it a little bit. It's about as clean cut as you can get to keep it all separate. But the point is, we're using metrics to not only measure our success with customers and allow them to measure us back, but we do the same things internally here. What metrics do we use to measure our SEO team? What metrics do we use to measure our pay-per-click team and website and development and so on? Now you have to do the same thing, and actually at a much grander scale, I believe, because there's so many more moving parts in the actual service companies themselves than there are like a digital marketing agency like mine.
Right.
And there's more variables that you may not have specific KPIs for, but What are some good takeaways that listeners can have on, or any metrics or any sort of KPI, key performance indicators that they can use to help run their service company more smoothly, whether it be marketing, operational, whatever, like any of those little tips. I don't want to say tips and tricks. Any more knowledge or wisdom that you can share with our listeners? Fire away, Josh.
Yeah, so for me, you're absolutely right. Like, as a digital marketing firm, like, it's fairly straightforward because you own the process, right, from front to back until the phone call, right? Yep. And then they have it, but you could track that process through the whole thing.
Right.
So it's fairly simple. And by the way, I agree with you. Like, I do disagree slightly. Like, I think you need to have both the new customer information and existing customer information, because you still have to buy some existing customers, right? And that's still relevant to me. But new customer information, not having that separated out, is a mistake.
I agree.
And so many companies don't do it. As far as KPIs that you should track, I believe every department should have KPIs.
I agree.
Period.
How else do you measure and
well, here's the thing. Like, I'm not in their business every day, right? Like, I work with large businesses and I help them scale like gigantic. Like, you know, Rusty works with us. You know, he's 20 million plus. We'll help blow up his business. He'll be, I want to get him 50, 60 million within 2 or 3 years.
Awesome.
We'll work with companies that size. I generally won't work with a $1 million business for like jam sessions. Of course I could give you, of course I could do consulting call. Of course we could give you documents and give you SOPs and make this turnkey for you. But for me to be worth my time to spend 20 hours a week on your business, like, you know, it's a lot of my time, yeah, right? I just have limited resources,
of course,
right?
Yeah.
For now. but it's
what you're super passionate about too. Right, so like, exactly. You're all in. So you're not just
dabbling. Like, Rusty will tell you, like he calls me all the freaking time. And I talk to him 3 or 4 times a day, or his team 3 or 4 times a day, and he's pestering me and he's got questions and he wants me to do this stuff. And that's the job.
Yep.
When I take you as a full on marketing client, that's what I'm doing. I'm doing marketing, business consulting, the whole thing.
Got it.
And I'm not in their business every single day. It's just not realistic. I'm not gonna do it. I don't want to do it. I work with people across the United States. That's not the play. The play is I should be able to see your business from the outside. By the way, as a business owner, you do too. If you don't have clear KPIs, goals set every single day for every single department, like, you're making mistakes. So many people, I can't tell you how many times you're like, what's your goals this year? And they have a big annual goal. And it's like, okay, how are we getting there?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't know.
But that's my goal.
Yeah, that's my goal. It's like, okay, I don't know how to make that actionable, right? Like, me, it's all about actionables, right? So that accounting department, they have KPIs on what's the AR report should look like, how much cost saving they're expected to turn in this month, right? Because, like, there's two ways to make money. It's either to bring in more revenue or to bring in more savings, right? Either way is just as good. I'll bonus people on savings. I don't give it. It's the same. It's the same in my pocketbook. Why wouldn't I? Yep. On your service side, you need to have a DP report, right, which is a daily progress. This is how much revenue we're bringing in every day compared to the goal for the month, so you know whether you're behind or ahead every single day. Because if you make daily adjustments, and it's a day delayed, right? Like, you can. The worst thing you want to do, and I've seen it so many times too, is like, you got this $1 million goal for the month, or $500,000, or $100,000, wherever you're at, right? And it's like day 25 of a 30-day month. It's like, oh crap, we're only 60% to goal. It's like, it's too late now.
Yeah.
Like, what are we going to do? Like, we get as close. There's no way we hit that. It's just what we have been doing. We could have adjusted a long time ago, right? So each department has to have different KPIs, and this could be conversion rate. Like, I believe in ranking techs, so that's really important too.
Mm-hmm.
For service departments, you need a DP report. You need a tech ranking report, which is going to include average ticket, number of calls, a number of install leads, number of accessories sold, and their combo revenue, which is their install and revenue they specifically brought in. It needs to be ranked, and your install department needs to be the same way. Your sales department needs to be the same way. The numbers are slightly different. It's conversion rate for sales, right? Number of sales, number of upsells, you get it.
Yep.
But the mistake a lot of people make is one of two ways. Most companies in this industry just don't track much. And that's a huge mistake, because if you can't tell from a few reports what's going on in your business, that means you don't have a business, you have a high-paying job, right? Because if you can't walk away and that business still makes money without you, it's not a business, period. and which is okay. A lot of people like it being there, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Sure, sure.
But I like growing businesses, and there's a difference. You need to be able to, in Hawaii, still have influence and know what's going on with your business. You have to, and you have to have reporting to do that. So, one, make sure you have reporting for each department. Have goals to base those. If without goals, any number is good enough, and then what's the point almost, right? So you got to have goals for each thing, too, that you're tracking.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing that people make, some people go the exact opposite direction, and they track freaking everything, which is beautiful. I want you to track everything. I love that. I don't want it in a report, though. Like, I don't want 30 things on my service technician report. It's not helpful. It's actually distracting and unhelpful. I want the five most important things. The five, which is service department, and I've already named those, right?
Yep.
Install. These are easy things, right? What's a callback? It's all very simple. Like, don't go over the top and report this complicated. If I can't hand this to someone outside of the industry and they understand what this looks like and what we're talking about, maybe not what it should be, right? Maybe they don't know what average ticket should be, but they know what average ticket means.
Sure.
They know what closing percentage means, right? Yeah. Like, if I can't hand this to someone else and they understand what's going on, then it's not a good report.
Yeah, and analysis paralysis is a real thing.
Well, it's not just analysis paralysis. Like, I'm the type of person, you're not going to overwhelm me with information. But if I see a number's off, then we deep dive. If the number's on and everything makes sense, like, why do I need to waste my time looking through these 40 metrics?
Sure, yep.
All these 40 metrics add up to these two numbers. These are the two numbers I care about. If these two are good, focus on those. We're good. Keep improving those. If one of those drops all of a sudden, like, okay, what happened? Let's dig dive into that. Let's look at all the data. Let's figure it out then. Not like every day I have to pay attention, or every week or every month, depending on what report is. Does that help?
Yeah, it sure does. So I don't know, Paul, if you could tell, but there's a little bit of passion pouring out of Josh on that little section there on metrics.
I get annoyed.
I love it.
But, I mean,
you fit in.
It's spot on. Like, I'm not looking at everything. I look at cost per lead. I look at conversion rates. I look at overall lead volume. I mean, spend. So I'm looking at these key things that I can look at on the fly fast that allow me to know if it needs to go into another meeting, a deeper dive, as you were saying.
Right.
And I think that's the most efficient way to do it for me.
Correct.
For me.
I think for everyone, by the way, like, I don't care how much a data person you are. Like, if you have this really complex report and you spend a lot of time on it, that's cool. But that means you're not spending time on other reports and other sides of your business.
Yep.
Like, you have limited bandwidth. Like,
sure.
You don't have this magic thing where you got 26 hours in a day and I only got 24.
I know.
That's just not how it works, right?
No matter, even if you get up earlier.
You could do you ever seen the Arnold Schwarzenegger speech? And he's like, the 10 keys to success. And one of them is like, sleep 2 to 4 hours a day. And it's like, if that's not enough sleep for you, sleep faster. I'm like, what does that mean?
Sleep faster. That wasn't too bad.
Yeah. That was really good.
Yeah. Get to the chopper.
Get down. Anyway.
Awesome. Okay. So my one, thanks for that. That's awesome. I think there was some really good nuggets in there too. And it still baffles me. Actually, I don't even know why it baffles me anymore, because there's still a lot of companies that just fly by the seat of their pants. And
they look at the bank account. They look at the bank account, and the bank account's up over last month. It's like, oh, business must be going well.
And that is
a dangerous way to run your business. Like, have a freaking P&L, like the basics. Why does every other business do that? But you think you can't get away with it. You could get away with not doing our industry.
There's inevitable failure in there in that path.
Yep.
Inevitable. So hear that, listeners. If you're doing that, commit to making a change, because the time spent on doing that is going to save you in the long run. Stop playing the short game.
Oh, yeah. I can't tell you this, too. This is a little bit like reporting, right? Like, building systems, I can't tell you how many times people will rather spend an hour a day every day than spend 3 hours once to fix it so it's never a problem again.
Yep.
Like, I have a general rule for my businesses. Like, anything could happen once. Literally, I mean, things happen. Anything could happen twice. It should never happen a third time.
Yep.
Because that second time, this is no longer a one-off. Now we create a system or a process or an SOP or whatever. Like, I'm not allowed to be asked the same question three times.
Love it. And that's the way it is.
That's the way it is. Like, why would we not do that?
Right.
It would be a waste of my time and their time not to do.
Sure. Love it. It's just, taking the time to actually do it versus thinking about it.
Yeah, but to take the time that you do it solves you from doing it not just that one time, but every time after. Yeah.
So, but I think that a lot of people will still struggle with that. Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, yeah, you think that way. I think that way.
Yeah, but I get it.
A lot of people are like, yeah, it's going to keep going.
A lot of people don't know where they actually spend their time, right? Like I think one of the most valuable things I could do when I first start working with somebody is like, hey, do me a favor, do a time study. Every 15 minutes, I want to write down. I want you to write. It's obnoxious. Do it for 2 days, 3 days. Every 15 minutes, write down what you worked on those 15 minutes. And then, like, it'll open their eyes like, holy crap, I spent 3 hours on Facebook. I spent an hour and a half on whatever, right? I spent 3 hours answering questions. Like, what questions were these? Like, can we solve these so they don't come back to you? You could do that, right? Why were you spending so long on Facebook? Like, oh, it's only 10 minutes at a time. I was like, well, it added up to 3 hours out of a 40-hour week. Like, that's a lot of time. Like, yep. Maybe we shouldn't be on Facebook.
Yep. Well, so I got talked into, and this is probably, I probably should have done this a long time ago, but I sold, mm-hmm. which I'm glad I did, on compartmentalizing throughout the day. So, like, I'll have to put in my calendar.
Yeah, time block everything, yeah.
So, in my calendar, even if it's 15 minutes, I have to sit and think about what my next topic is going to be for a podcast or to just think about the question that had come up that I need to think through or whatever.
Right.
I have to block out my calendar and my day. And my calendar is visible to the team. Like, you can see that I have my calendar blocked. And if you need to meet with me, you have to fit within that time frame. But it's forced me to create a habit of chunking out those times to think through things like this. Something comes up that I need to think through, especially in our world with technology moving at lightning speed. This is why I haven't dipped out of the trades. Like, it's enough just to focus on this without going wider in other services. But I've had to compartmentalize my days. And so I started doing time blocking.
Yeah.
And it was probably one of the most effective things I've done for this business is it gave me that, that consistency and the efficiency of knowing I only work on this at this time. Not that it doesn't spill over here and there, but for the most part, it keeps me regimented.
Yeah, no, I'm a big fan of time blocking. I think it's really important, especially when you get a bigger team, but even when you're smaller, it just keeps you on track and it helps you prioritize. Yep. It's so easy to be a firefighter instead of playing fire prevention.
Mm-hmm.
It's just natural. It's just human, right?
Yep.
And you don't want to be a firefighter.
Nah.
You want to play fire prevention. And that's the way to succeed. Like, that's the fun stuff. I love building, like, as weird as it sounds, like, I hate building an SOP. It's no fun, right? But I love the fact that when it's done, it's like,
yeah,
I get to walk off. It's done, right? Like, I don't have to worry about this for at least months.
Right. It usually works out. Yeah, because they kind of suck to go through.
Oh, like, yeah. Gosh. They're tedious. They're tedious and boring. But I guess everybody on the same page.
Yep.
And that's a big deal down the road. Like, you should be providing consistent service not only to your clients, your end customer, but to your actual customers, which is your team members.
Love it.
Yeah.
All right, man. I won't keep any longer. We already spent enough time on here too. But if you're game, we could do one more of these. If we plan this thing out, because there's a couple different topics that we can actually drill more on versus broad. Are you game?
If you want to do it, we'll do it, bro.
Okay, cool. We'll make sure that we get Tall Paul in here to do it, but. Again, thanks, man, for coming in. I appreciate you so much. Again, what we'll do too is if you like, with Clover is we'll make a post and leave some contact information. If you're cool with that, we can reach out to you. And
I mean, if you're looking for Review Kangaroo, you can always go to reviewkangaroo.com. It's REVU. Email info@reviewkangaroo.com. Clover is growwithclover.com. You'll see my face plaster all over it. Contact information all over it. It's pretty easy to find, man.
All right, listeners, thank you so much, Josh. Appreciate you, brother. We'll see you next time. Take care.
All right. Bye, bud.
Thank you for listening to The Point. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please consider leaving us a review in the App Store. And don't forget to share with your friends. Till next time, kick some ass.
Welcome to The Point Home Services, the podcast where real contractors share real strategies. We cut through the noise and get straight to the point with the contractors that are working in the field right now. If you run a home services business and want to lead better, grow faster, and stay sharp, you're in the right place. Now, before we get started, I need you to do one thing. Only 30% of our listeners are following the show. So stop what you're doing, hit follow, and let's get to the point.